All right, welcome to SVU Pod, Especially Heinous. I'm Gabe.
I'm Tasha.
All right, so we are on season 6, episode 21. We're getting so close to the end.
We're so close. Season 6. What's going to happen when this season is over? We're going to take a summer break, but not from Patreon. So
yeah, okay.
If you guys want to know the difference between octopus and octopussies, stick with us on Patreon.
Gross. One's a huge slut. I know that. Okay, season 6, episode 21, Blood.
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 So, the opening scene, it's nighttime. A woman runs out of a building, and it seems to be a party going on in the building. She's trying to get into her car when these two dudes say, "Where are you going, bitch?" and, like, throw her up against the car. They start ripping her clothes and slapping her, and it's pretty clear these men were trying to rape her. But they ended up stealing her car when they heard the police sirens, and they took off.
That was the impression that we got from it. It seemed that way.
It seemed that way. Because they were like, "You know what we want," and they were like ripping her clothes, and I was like, "Oh my god!"
Right, that was a little red herring, is what they were doing for us. But we'll find that out. Also,
I was going to let them find out. That's why I said it that way.
Oh, well. Oh, and you could not see their faces or anything. They had hoods up and stuff.
Yeah, I assumed that they were like two men. That was another red herring. That's why I was letting them figure it out. So,
okay,
we were going to get there. We're going to be like, "Oh my god, the fingernails! It's clearly a woman because of the painted fingernails." On the way out of the alley, the car stops and they throw a fucking car seat out of the window. And the woman shouts and you can hear a baby crying in the car seat. Oh, my fucking god. They just, like, threw a baby out of the car. Now, SVU and responders are on the scene. Toots tells Betty and Stabes that the victim is Samantha Bevan. She's 21 years old. She was attacked inside the club, but there were no witnesses. The baby is 9 months old. Samantha and her baby are on the way to the hospital. Samantha had said that she didn't see the faces of her attackers, but Munch pops out of the alley, and out of the darkness. He just shows up as he does, as a fucking city rat would do. And he says that the cameras may have caught the two dudes. Stabler wonders who leaves their baby in the car while they go into the club. I think we were all wondering, but it was also like, don't, we're not doing this, Stabler.
Let's wonder that, but also watch your tone.
Watch your tone. You don't get to
it's
fucking...
It's okay to wonder that, but he kicks it off with victim blaming.
He 100%.
And rides it right the fuck out.
He's got this what kind of mother vibe going, and I'm like, don't.
Yes, exactly.
I don't know what kind of father.
This whole episode is an arc of... Mm-hmm. Stabes judging and then Stabes relating and then us having to go on his dad ride with him.
Mm-hmm. Cut to the hospital. Benson and Stabler get updates from the staff. Yeah. The baby, Joey, has no broken bones. The doctor is like, "He's a little trooper. He's so strong." The mom, Samantha, on the other hand, is pretty shook up and has some cuts and bruises. They are waiting on Samantha to nurse before doing a rape kit. The nurse lady brings Benny and Stabes to Samantha's bed, but she's gone. She was just there. The music gets all swelly, and the nurse tells them there are only two exits, and they take off to check. Benson finds Samantha outside getting into a cab with the baby and tells her to hold on, but Samantha really wants to go home and keeps saying she's okay. Benny is really trying to convince her to get checked out and answer some questions. Samantha says she's really got to get Joey home because he's tired. Fucking Stabler's fat ass rolls up and says, "Maybe you should have thought about Joey before you decided to leave him in a car while you went clubbing." Fuck you. And she says, "I know it was stupid, but they were looking for a bartender and I needed a little bit of money. I'm a, you know," she's a young mom. The doctor comes out and tells Samantha she has to come back inside. Joey's tox screen was positive for opiates. Uh-oh. They obviously got into his system from breastfeeding.
Yeah.
Theme song.
Back at the precinct, Benson and Stabler are getting checked by Daddy Cragen in a precinct walk and talk. Sam Bevan is waiting in the interview room. What took you so fucking long? Sam has two prior offenses of leaving the baby alone, so Joey was removed from her care by a social worker. Stabler's gonna piss me off this episode with all this mom shaving. He doesn't get the story before he starts dragging a woman who's clearly struggling. You know, the way he talks about somebody who's struggling with substance abuse or whatever she's got going on is completely, it's just
completely
fucked.
Like Stabler.
Completely Stabler. This is so Stabler of Stabler.
Mm-hmm.
They head to the squad room where Munch and Toots are reviewing security camera footage of the alley attack, but again, we can't see the perps' faces. Sam says she's been using painkillers since she had a fall down the subway stairs. They were prescription. And she's been hooked ever since. Obviously, they're talking about oxycodone, but they call it oxycodone, which I'm Toots fills everybody in on what that is. And he says, they call it hillbilly heroin. Crush it, snort it, and get 12 hours worth of pain meds in one hit. I would love to dive into this, but I won't. This shit fucking enrages me. But a couple things. They call it hillbilly heroin because, one, the people of Appalachia and surrounding rural areas were fucking targeted by pharmaceutical companies, creating an epidemic, and then they just fucking left it there. And two, the people of Appalachia and surrounding areas have been labeled hillbillies, which is offensive because it's equated with the assumption that these people are uneducated, unintelligent, uncivilized, which puts them in even more of a disparaging position because classism is very real.
Right.
So anyway, I'm just like going out because I don't like it that he called it that. Because what the narrative that it gives, I'm like, I'm not going to go into it. But the narrative that it gives is that, quote unquote, stupid poor people got out of hand with this thing and created this epidemic. And it's like, no, they were targeted. They were lied to. And they just have a different way of living. I'm taking my sweatshirt off. It made me sweaty. Cragen wonders if they should be investigating her rape while at the same time prosecuting her for child endangerment. And Benson says they should get her into treatment and try to find her attackers. They shouldn't punish her for being raped. Toots tells them to look again and replays the tape. The guys weren't attempting to sexually assault her. They were patting her down. Stabler thinks they were dealers and she owed them. Cragen chimes in and says, well, that means she knows them. He wants Munch and Toots at Taru to review the tape and get faces with that high-tech NASA-level shit they got over there.
Right.
And Benny and Stabes are going to go in to interview Samantha. In the interview room, Samantha's pacing. She's frustrated. She claims she had never seen the men before. It was dark and they grabbed her. The detectives follow up on her initial statement. The owner of the bar said they didn't have an opening for work that night, so it could mean that Sam was there looking for drugs. She lied to them initially. She denies that and asks why she's being treated like a criminal. And Stabler tells her that Baby Joey's tox report makes her one. Benson lays it out matter-of-factly without the judgment that Stabler can't help but lead with. She explains to Samantha that she put Joey in danger, and the best way to go about this is to be honest and help with the investigation. Then Benny will call social services, get her into rehab, which will get Joey back into her custody sooner. Sam gives in and tells them what she knows. One of the dudes was Jake Lamette. He sells her pills sometimes, and she doesn't know the other guy. Well, we got to go to the apartment of Jake Lamette. There's loud and terrible music playing as Munch and Toots go into Jake's gross apartment. It's like nondescript elevator metal is what I would call it. Like, there's no vocals. It's very much what you're imagining.
Generic, like, it's generic metal like that they would have on a show in the background. Like, it doesn't definitely elevator metal. That's perfect.
Like, we can't clear Drowning Pool, so we're just going to figure out our own vibe. Jake is unconscious on the floor, surrounded by pills and an open pill bottle. Toots checks his pulse. He's alive, and he rolls over and barfs. Munch calls for the ambulance and then finds a bag of Oxy paid for by Medicare. It's possible that Jake is stealing from people. The prescription is written to Jenny Rogers. I'm immediately like, no, people that get the prescriptions are selling it, but...
Yeah.
But I'm a judgy fucking Stabes who thinks the worst about everybody, so...
Right. Benny and Stabes knock on Jenny Rogers' door. The woman who answers the door is her daughter-in-law. Jenny just left for the store.
You know what I wrote?
What?
The second she opens the door, I don't believe her.
Oh my God. I know. I was like, something's amiss, I think. Like
something's amiss with this mess. I'll see myself out. Bye.
Bye. I'll get the door for you. She wants to know if Jenny's in trouble. She also says that Jenny's been getting pretty forgetful and wandering off a lot. Benny asks her if Jenny takes any pain meds. Apparently, she takes pills for a wicked... What are you going to do? Apparently.
Yeah. Apparently.
Jenny takes pills for a wicked bad sciatica. Stabler asks her if she knows if anyone's taking Jenny's pills or stealing them. The gal says that 2 days ago, Jenny came home saying she had slipped and had a big bruise on her face. It's possible that... That's when her pills were taken, like maybe she was mugged. Benny wants to know where they can find Jenny, and the daughter-in-law says she's going to come with because Jenny should be home by now. And then I was like, I don't trust this fucking lady. Ugh, they find Jenny on the street. I know this lady, but I can't place her. I know you know.
This is acting queen Melinda Dillon. This is Ralphie's mom in A Christmas Story. Henderson in Harry and the Hendersons. She was in Tu Wong Fu. She was in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Magnolia. She passed away last year, R.A.P.
Who was she in Tu Wong Fu?
Myrna. Myrna runs the beauty parlor they go to in Tuong Fu. Okay.
Interesting. Okay, so they find sweet little Jenny on the street. She's a cute little lady. Tasha just said the whole thing. When they come up to her, she pretends the cup she's using is tea, but nothing gets by daughter-in-law. Stabler kind of rags on the daughter-in-law for, quote, letting Jenny beg on the street, but Jenny knows the family needs money and they keep catching her begging. They ask her to stop, but they can't lock her up in the apartment all day. Stabler, just blaming women for shit. I mean, fuck this lady, but like...
Right.
Stabler points out the bruise on Jenny's face and she says she slipped on ice and fell. Benson shows her the pills and he was like, did you lose them when you slipped? And she's like, oh, I must have. You can tell on Stabler's face. He's like, I don't believe this lady. When asked if she was attacked, Jenny says yes. She doesn't know who it was. They show her a photo of a lineup and ask her to identify her attacker, and she points at Jake. Mm-hmm. At the hospital, Toots and Munch are there when Jake wakes up. Jake is handcuffed to the bed by a police officer. He's all sweaty and confused. They accuse him of rape, and he says he doesn't have to rape anybody, which I hate when people fucking say that. That's
not
so
what that is.
Gross. Yeah. I don't have to resort to rape. That's what it sounds like. That's like, yeah. It's fucking
weird. I know that's the only option for some dudes, but... Like, no, that's not what it's about.
Yeah.
I feel like if somebody accused a person who didn't have those tendencies, they'd be like, I'm not a fucking rapist. They wouldn't be like, I don't have to do that. I've thought about it. It's a possibility if it gets to it, but
sometime in the future, maybe if I fuck up my face, maybe I have to. I don't know. It's like, what?
No. It's not what it is. That's gross. That's not what that is.
Yeah. Munch and Toots want him to tell them who the other guy was that attacked Sam. He says he doesn't have a partner. They tell him to save it and that Sam gave him up. They tell him that Jenny picked him out of the lineup after he attacked her and took the meds. He says, what painkillers? And Toots is like, the ones you stuffed up your nose and left all over the apartment. The dude laughs and says, you mean Jenny's? She sold them to me. Back at the precinct, Stabler tells Cragen that Jake is a fucking liar. He doesn't think Jenny sold him the pills. Why would she rat out Jake if she did? Which makes sense. Cragen wants to know if Jenny IDing Jake will hold up. And Stabler says that she seems a bit senile because she was panhandling. She seems a bit senile because she was panhandling. And then Munch jumps in and he was like, well, she's broke. And Toots says it's possible that Jenny is selling her prescriptions to help her family. He was in narcotics and says that he's seen a lot of cases like this. Benson comes in. Baby Joey has a fever and is back in the hospital. Oh, he's in ICU with possible pneumonia from aspirating milk into his lungs. He was lethargic from the opiates. And when he drank milk, it went into his lungs. Stabler wants to know why Jake is beating up on a young mother and a sweet old lady, two defenseless women. Benson thinks maybe he gets off on it, or it's him trying to intimidate them. Munch says that according to the video, it looks like Jake's partner dishes out the punches. But the big issue is Jake won't give up the dude's name. Cragen tells them to have Jake charged with sodomy, grand larceny, kidnap, and attempted murder. That's like 20 years, and he'll talk. Munch gets a call. Sam's car was found dumped in Queens.
Benny and Stabes walk into the forensics garage. She's fully embracing the aught skinny scarf this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan, Tasha keeps calling me Kyle for some reason, O'Halloran, goes over Sam's car with the detectives. I see him now in his face as a Kyle. He's a Ryan just as much as he's a Kyle, but I'm...
All of a sudden, sixth season, you don't recognize him? It's so weird.
I recognize him, but my brain wants to call him Kyle.
That's weird that your brain just did that randomly.
I see his Kyle, but it's Ryan. But he's just...
Yeah.
Kyle and Ryan are, it's split the diff. It's one and the same.
See, we're like flipping it because I could never tell it was Ryan. You're always like, it's Ryan O'Halloran or whatever. And now I'm like, I recognize him. And you're like, Kyle? I'm like, what's happening? Okay.
So the car was wiped clean. No prints, but they found some bottles.
But they did find something, though. There was a note. And it said, thanks for the F Shack. Love Dirty Mike and the boys.
Oh shit.
They're coppers. Let's grease it, boys. Rub your dicks in the car when you run by. We will fuck in that car again. It is going to happen.
Gabe texted me yesterday and was like, you know it's a good episode when I can slip a other guy's reference into it. And I was like, yay. Do you know what part? And I'm like, no. I'll have to watch it again. I would have never fucking been like,
really?
This part.
Well, in my mind, I was like, this is going to be one of those kismet things where we both write this down.
We both look up the exact quote to have it word for word.
They're coppers. Let's grease it, boys. Rub your dicks in the car when you run.
All right. The car was wiped clean. There were no prints, but they found some bottles of painkillers with Jenny's name on them. She is actually fucking dealing. Mm. Stabler thinks they need to bring in her whole family. I say dealing, she's selling her own prescriptions. Toots walks in to tell Stabler he just got a call from a friend at another precinct. Wink. Kathleen fucking Stabler got picked up on a DUI. Mm. Stabler leaves with the puzzled look of a parent who just realized they have no room to talk shit about other people and their parenting.
Oh, yeah.
So he goes to see Kathleen in jail. He's met by Sergeant Ray Crawford. This guy's huge in the soap opera game, which I wasn't surprised by because he's fucking handsome ass. He tells Stabes that Kathleen did an illegal U-turn, and when she was pulled over, she smelled like alcohol. And they don't even bring up the fact that not only is it a DUI, but she's underage as well. Stabler asked if they booked her yet, and this guy says, yeah, like he's apologizing for it.
Yeah.
And explains that she didn't tell them who she was. They only found out when they saw Stabler's courtesy shield in her wallet. I looked that
up. I was going to say, I'm like, this can't be a fucking thing. Ooh. Tell me about it right now. Okay.
Courtesy shields, aka courtesy cards, are something that I've never heard of. Okay. It's some corrupt shit that I can and can't believe exists. Mm-hmm. So cops give these laminated cards to friends, family, or whoever they want. People use them to get out of shit with cops, like tickets and small infractions and shit like that. Like they'll show the card and it shows that they're connected to the police in some way. And it's just fucking known.
Is there a certain like official card where everybody has?
Yes.
That's fucking crazy. I can't believe that's a thing that's legal.
Well, I read all this stuff about it. And then I read this article of other police being like, this is fucked up that this exists. And the fact that like I pull someone over and they're like, I know a guy. Mm-hmm. There was somebody that was either he wrote the piece or he was interviewed for it or something. But there was a cop who pulled somebody over, was given this card and was told, I'm so-and-so's relative, whatever, blah, 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 how they were related to this lieutenant or something. He gave him a ticket anyway, and he got demoted and got, like, sideways in trouble.
That's fucked up.
It's so fucked up. It's a get-out-of-jail-free card, and they're allowed a certain number or something. Don't quote me on that, but you can buy them online. It's insane that it exists. It's so outside the law that it's
fucked up.
And Stabler's like, the way he asked, did you book her?
Like, you better not have.
If you booked her, this is a problem. Mm-hmm. So Stabler's taken to Kathleen's holding cell. Daddy! He asks her why she didn't call him or tell the cops who her dad was. You didn't do the Reese Witherspoon drunk on the side of the road. Do you know who I am?
Yeah.
I hate to hold her to that. That was so many years ago.
I don't remember. I don't know what you're even talking about.
Oh. It was one of those things where...
Was it?
I think it was a DUI situation.
Oh, I didn't know if it was a movie or something. You know, gross.
Like after she was like, oh, fucking gross.
Yeah.
He asks her why she didn't call him or tell the cops who her dad was. And she tells him that she was scared of what he would do when he found out about the DUI. Valid.
Yeah.
He bails her out. And Kathy shows up. Mom.
Yeah.
Now, remember, they're not living together and they're very on the rocks. He tells Kathy that he's going to take care of it.
Oh, I hated that.
And Kathy starts apologizing to Stabler. Sorry, there was this party. Fucking Stabes jumps down her throat because he's the better parent. And he goes, and you just let her go. Yeah, she's 17. She's 17 going to a party with her friends, you fucking ass.
Yeah.
So he tells Kathy to just take Kathleen home. They'll talk tomorrow. Mm. As he's leaving, he spins on a heel, turns around, hands Kathleen's wallet, but like holds it in her face while he eyeballs her.
And she's like, ugh, grabs it.
You should have fully divorced him at this point, Kathy. Like this was saying a lot.
I can't believe you had 6 kids with him. Ugh. It's those tiny undies that we saw in the first season. Oh,
shit. But we get it, Kathy.
Big old bubble butt.
Your CDs are in his truck. We fucking get it.
Your CDs are in his truck.
Back at the precinct, Stabler gets back to work. Benny's there to meet him along with Jenny, Carol, the daughter-in-law, and Jenny's son, Kevin. Kevin is pissed that they have to be there and doesn't understand why they're giving his mom shit. And Stabler's like, relax, guy. You don't have to stay. We just want to know what the guy we pulled in for rape is doing with your mom's prescriptions.
Yeah.
Kevin's tone changes and asks his mom if her attacker did anything to her. And she said he just pushed her.
Yeah.
Thank God he only stole your pills. Stabler tells Jake and Carol that Jake told them that Jenny actually sold him her pill. Kevin doesn't like it. Mm-hmm. They've got some nerve accusing his mom of that.
Yeah.
Benny asks Carol and Kevin to leave the room so they can talk to Jenny alone. And Kevin's like, no. I wouldn't either if it was my mom, especially if they're like questioning her mental stability and things like that. I'd be like, absolutely fucking not. So now they're just going to have Kevin and Carol in the room with them. Mm-hmm. Benson has evidence that Jenny went to two different doctors within 10 days to get Oxy, and the pills ended up with two different drug dealers. Mm-hmm. Kevin, again, doesn't like it. And so he's like, Mom, we don't have to fucking do this. We're getting out of here. But Jenny says she's willing to answer the detective's questions. So they go in. Selling your pain meds is a serious crime. I didn't. Jake Lamette says you did. You picked his photo out. Did he attack you or no? She says she made a mistake and doesn't remember. Mm. Benson asks her if she remembers going to two different doctors to fill her prescriptions. Well, I have very bad arthritis. And Benny catches that. Carol said you have sciatica. Carol, who hasn't done much talking in this room, jumps in and says, oh, she's got that too.
Yeah.
So then Jenny continues, sometimes I lose my pills and I want to be sure that I have enough. Benny's mm-hmm. not buying it, but she's not being an asshole about it either. She asks Jenny again if she lost them or did she sell them because she needed the money. Mm-hmm. And Jenny starts to cry. For some reason, really clung to the fact that Jenny was in on it and was not a victim in any way. So I'm like, this crying feels weaponized.
I know. Well, no, me too. I don't know. Off until like close to the end, I was like, is she going to turn around and be like, just kidding. I'm known as the night pill lady.
Yeah.
Kingpin in the fucking whatever.
I'm not Jenny. I'm Patty the pill pusher. Fucking rah. And I use my innocent.
Everybody calls me Triple P on the streets.
Yeah.
Okay. So, behind the glass in Cragen's butt. That's it.
Oh, yay.
Cragen doesn't know who they're supposed to believe.
That's comedy. That is. It is. I held my breath so I could hear every word of the long, drawn-out thing that you were going to do.
Psych.
Just I love you.
Keeping it fresh. Gotta keep it fresh. Okay. In Cragen's butt. Cragen doesn't know who they're supposed to believe, the rapist or the crying granny. That's his words, not mine. Toots is like, she either has to be selling or she is in a lot of pain because she takes a very, very high dose.
Yeah.
She could make like 5K from her pills on the street. It's possible that Jenny is acting alone in selling. Who would think twice when giving an old lady pills? Cragen wonders about Carol and Kevin, but Toot says that they have a clean records, which to me means nothing, okay?
Nothing.
They need to reach out to Jenny's doctor to see how much pain she's actually in. Toots goes over to the evidence board. The only thing connecting Jenny and Sam is Jake. The only thing they know about Jake's partner in the crime or whatever is that everyone is too scared to give up his name. Cragen wants Munch and Toots to light a fire under Taru. They need an ID on the partner. Okay. At the Taru lab, Taruin was able to manipulate the camera footage to show Jake's face.
Jesus.
Which, yeah, correct. Jesus.
What luck.
And oh my God, they can't get a picture of the partner's face, but their nails are done. They weren't even like long nails. They were just like nails. It's possible that they're a woman.
Painted nails. It's a woman.
Yeah. In the precinct, Sam is shown the footage of her attacker and asked to identify the woman in the footage. Yeah. Sam says she doesn't know, but Benson tells her that they know that women can be more vicious with sexual assault and that it can be personal, especially if the victim is younger and prettier than they are.
Perceived.
Yeah. I don't know about any of that.
And you know what that is?
The patriarchy.
That's the patriarchy. Internalized mm-hmm. misogyny. That is not inherent to women.
Mm-hmm. The music gets all swelly, and Sam says she doesn't want to tell because she's afraid that the woman will kill her. You don't know what she's like. Benson points out that the perp almost killed Joey and would have done it without a second thought. That bitch threw a damn baby out of the car. Jake was actually the one driving. Sam breaks mm-hmm. and tells him it's fucking Carol. Jenny's still.
This is me thinking that I've fucking nailed it. And I'm like, I knew it.
Like, I need to get in the academy.
I am a crime show writer. Can't get one past me, Carol. So Benny and Stabes knock and just walk into the Rogers apartment calling for Carol. We've got an unlocked door and swelly music. That means it's dead body time. Mm-hmm. Oop, Carol's dead on the kitchen floor. I don't care about Carol, so.
Yeah.
Carol's dead on the kitchen floor. She bled out from a knife wound. Benny looks in a closet. It's like a walk-in closet, and it's set up as Jenny's bedroom. So they're immediately like, Jenny's not being treated well.
And it's just like, it's just like a fucking blanket on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Ugh.
Okay, Kevin comes home, freaks out, and tears toward Carol. Stabler grabs him to hold him back and keep him from touching her. And he's like, let me go. Who did this? Stabes tells him he'll contaminate the crime scene and sits him down. And Kevin's just sobbing. There are bloody footprints across the apartment. Benny asks Kevin where Jenny is. And he said,
and he's like, Mom,
she should be at home.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible the bloody prints are Jenny's. And Kevin's just saying, no, Mom, no, no, over and over. At this point, I thought Kevin had no idea about anything and that Jenny and Carol were pulling some shit. Back at the precinct, the squad is running down what they're doing to find Jenny. They've checked the airports, bus, and train terminals. Kevin's got an alibi. He said he was at work a few miles from home when Carol was attacked. Stabes speculates that it's possible that because he works alone, he was able to slip out, go home, kill Carol, and go back. But what's his motive? Oh, Benson has that, Captain. Carol's bringing in drug dealing money. They found a bank account under her maiden name with $20,000 in it. Maybe Kevin's motive to kill was that Carol wasn't going to share the money with him, or maybe he just discovered it or whatever, because it was literally just hers. Cut to the crime scene photos. One of Carol's Lee press-on fingernails was broken off, and Toots lets us know that CSU's looking for it. It's possible she got DNA from the killer under the nail. No prints are on the knife used to kill Carol because there's a textured handle. If only it had been a tiny pebble from the driveway.
In somebody's throat.
Those pick up perfect prints. Yeah. It's unfortunate. The footprint is a woman's size 7 shoe, but it can't be Sam's because she's been staying at the hospital with Joey. Stabler doesn't think Jenny has the strength needed to kill Carol.
Stabbing's pretty hard, I guess.
Yeah. Really takes it out of you. And Cragen goes, it only takes one good blow to the right spot. Those are words that I live by the way.
That was my nickname in high school.
Just then, Benson gets a call. Sam's baby Joey passed away the previous day. And Sam had left the hospital right after it happened. It's possible she got to Carol before SVU did. They need to locate Sam. Over at the apartment of Samantha Bevan, Benson and Stabler go in again. Unlocked. Sam's inside. She's high, super out of it, crouched against the wall by Joey's crib. Stabes calls for an ambulance, and Sam is just terribly distraught over losing baby Joey, of course. Mm-hmm. They're trying to ask her questions, and she's kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
They ask her where she went when she left the hospital, and she says she doesn't remember. Did she go get drugs from Carol? No, I hate her. Benson tells her that Carol is dead and asks if she killed her. Sam says, she got me hooked. I'm glad she's dead. Benny gets a call and walks away to take it. Stabler stays with Sam as she talks. I can take them now. They can't hurt Joey anymore. Which is just highlighting how fucking sad addiction is. The call was from the crime lab. They found bloody fingerprints on the payphone outside of Carol and Kevin's apartment. The only call that was made was to a storage facility outside of Queens.
Mm-hmm. The guy at the storage place tells Benny and Stabes that a, quote, crazy broad called and asked when they closed. It was Jenny. He shows them to her unit, and the storage dude says, crazy bitch, close it from the inside. I'm like, dude, she's an old fucking lady. Like, chill. They get in. Jenny is in there with candles lit, sitting with her stuff, and with her mom's blanket across her lap. Benny tells her that she can't stay there, but she says she can. The gas station across the street has a pretty clean bathroom. Jenny tells him that she stored her parents' things there when she sold her house. Stabler asks her what's wrong with the apartment, and Jenny's like, Carol is what's wrong with it. Benny asks if she killed Carol, and Jenny says, perhaps I should get a lawyer. That's why where I was like, she's in on it.
Mm-hmm.
She knows to say to get a lawyer. I was like, this old broad's in on it. At the precinct, Carol's lawyer calls what happened a tragedy, but self-defense.
Jenny's lawyer was in the Devil's Advocate. She was J.B. Poteet on Designing Women. My favorite thing I found out about her, though, is that she was the voice of Eleanor Sherman, J. Sherman's mother on The Critic.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
It stinks.
Corner Warner was on The Devil's Advocate too. She was one of the hot wives that like her face turned into a devil.
She was one of the hot ladies on the elevator.
Yeah. So at the precinct, Jenny's lawyer calls what happened a tragedy, but self-defense. Jenny cracked after years of financial, emotional, and physical abuse. Craigan wants to know how they can go with an elder abuse plea if she didn't report it. And the lawyer says it's because Jenny is one of 1.5 million victims who don't report.
Yeah.
Jenny had to... I'm not going to even get started on like how we treat our old people. Mm-hmm. Jenny had to sell her parents' house because Kevin had a, quote, business venture gone wrong. And the lawyer's like, yeah, that happens in Atlantic City, a.k.a. he has gambling debt. Mm-hmm. Then he lost his job and got hurt at work when he was drunk on the job. His back was never the same, Jenny says.
So all of this defending Kevin is Jenny speaking. The lawyer's like, he fucked her over. And she's like, well,
he's my son.
There's an explanation.
Yeah. Jenny says that Carol got Kevin hooked on pot and cocaine. Carol had a bunch of money because they were selling drugs, and Kevin had to ask Carol for money all the time. Benson asks if Carol or Kevin ever hurt her. Jenny says that Carol was cruel and she would twist her arm and was mean to her. Stabler asks Jenny if Kevin ever hit her, and then she kind of is like, oh, he didn't mean to hurt me. And I'm like, my heart.
I know.
Benny asks about the night Carol died. She needs to tell them her side of the story. She doesn't have to talk, but Stabler says that they can convict with just the pictures alone. Benson tries to convince her to talk and tells her that the jury would take Jenny's abuse into consideration. So they're like, you're kind of stuck because we're going to convict anyways, and either you tell us and you'll get a better treatment, you know? Mm-hmm. Craigan comes in. Carol's missing fingernail was found. Blood and skin fragments were found under the nail. The blood is from a man. So it's not Jenny. Jenny's a bit reluctant, but finally tells them that she came home from the store, but she didn't go back into the apartment because she heard people arguing. She hid and a man ran down the stairs. It was fucking Kevin. She went into the apartment. She saw Carol pulled the knife out of her, but couldn't stop the bleeding. And then I'm like, oh, she's playing them, isn't she?
God, yeah.
I'm such a fuck. Kevin comes from behind the glass. He's pissed that no one called him to let them know they found Jenny, a.k.a. his mom. Craigan tells him that Jenny is telling them about how he killed Carol. Toots comes up behind him. Kevin's like, why would I fucking kill my wife? I don't know. Ask every murdered wife out there.
Yeah. Ask statistics. Take my wife, please. Ask Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah. All boomer humor is like, I hate my wife. And like, okay.
Boomer humor. I've never heard those two words together, which is weird.
You haven't?
No.
Oh, my God. When told about how Carol robbed him, he gets fucking angry and screams out to Jenny not to say anything. Don't listen to the mob. Don't say anything. Kevin is restrained and arrested. A scratch on his neck is exposed. Craigan thinks it's Carol's. Later, Craigan checks on Stabler at the lockers and asks what happened the night Kathleen got in trouble. Ooh, this is intense. Mm-hmm. Stabler tells him that he got the charge dropped to a moving violation. And Craigan's like, oh, no, honey. I meant what happened after you made everybody make the DUI go away. And I was like, oh, shit. Craigan tells him that the DUI can still be traced. He could get in trouble. And so could the dudes that fucking stuck their neck out for him. But you won't because you'll help cover it, too. Because for some reason, you just love fucking Stabler getting in trouble. Stabler starts to walk away. And Craigan says, that's the message you want to send to your kids?
Oh.
That the law only applies to certain people? And Stabler's big brass nutsacks walk over to Craigan and get super close. And he says, I'm taking care of my family. And given the chance, I'll do it again. And I'm like, you're really going to fucking say that to your boss? You were going to say, I'm going to break the law to your captain of the police that you do it again?
Yeah, it really shows what you know your limits are and are not.
Mm-hmm. There's a fucking stare off and my basement is flooded. Luckily, Novak comes in, but she's like, am I interrupting something? Craig and Stabler are still staring at each other.
And they're both like, hang on 1 second. Okay.
Yeah. And then after a minute, Craigan's like, no. And then asked her about the arraignment. And I wrote, woof. Novak says Kevin was denied bail and she needs their statements. And again, Craigan and Stabler are still fucking eye fucking each other.
The human torch was denied a bank loan.
Lanolin? Craigan says to Novak, Detective Stabler will start working on it and walks away. And that was intense. Boing, 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 boing.
I mean, he said with his eyes, you're going to fucking do what I say.
Yeah.
At the trial, Jenny's on the stand. Novak asks her to recount what happened. when Carol was murdered, Stabler's weirdly side-eyeing Kevin. And I think he's thinking what I'm thinking, that Kevin didn't kill Carol. This is all I have written down. Kevin didn't kill Carol, and Jenny's a con woman who'd throw her own kid under the bus.
Yeah.
Poor Jenny.
I know.
So, yeah, Jenny's on the stand. Novak asks her who she saw running down the stairs. Now Jenny's saying that she didn't see who it was. She was too scared to look. Oh. And Novak reminds her that you told the grand jury that it was Kevin who was running down the stairs. Did you lie to the grand jury? These are perjury charges you're looking at. So just a little reminder. Jenny says that she said it was Kevin because she was mad at him for marrying Carol. So she did it to punish him.
Okay.
And Novak is fucking blown away by this.
And let's be honest, we all were. We all were.
Yeah.
There was a collective court.
Jenny then says that she's nearly 70 and gets confused. Sorry.
Yeah.
So the defense moves for dismissal. Since Novak has no more witnesses, the judge has to dismiss the case. Kevin's free to go.
Oh, also, Stabler is staring at Jenny and Kevin hugging, and I'm hoping that he's realizing he's doing the fucking same thing with Kathleen. You know?
Yeah. They have to spell it out a little more for me. I didn't catch that yet, but I also was like, this bitch, what mother?
What kind of mother?
Back at the precinct, Novak and Stabler are walking into the squad room chatting about the case. Novak thought Jenny was strong enough to testify. And as they cross the threshold of those magnificent double doors, Benson is hanging up a call from Rikers. Benson hangs up a call from Rikers. Jenny had visited Kevin the night before. Stabler asks Novak how she fucking let that happen. And Novak goes, I can't stop a mother from visiting her son. And a frustrated Stabler huffs, looks like we can't stop a son from beating up his mom either. Ugh. Cragen asks if she's going to charge Jenny with perjury. Novak doesn't see the point in sending her to jail when she's the victim. Stabler says that if they don't do something, Kevin's going to keep abusing Jenny. But Cragen says it's over. They aren't social workers.
Dude, and this is why Jenny wanted to go with him to find her mom so that she wouldn't talk.
Carol,
yeah. Like, so she wouldn't talk because she had a bruise and it wasn't from Jake. You know, it was from one of them.
Right.
So I was like, when she offered to go with him, I was like, why? They've never had a character do this.
Mm-hmm. In Kevin's apartment, a social worker from APS is there to speak with Jenny. Kevin lets her in and Stabler, follows right behind her.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin tells him that he's not allowed in. You're trespassing. Get out.
Mm-hmm.
But the social worker is allowed a police escort. This is a dangerous home, haven't you heard? The guy who lives here is a murderer. We're like, Stabler, you shady bitch. Oh, I'm back on your side. Jenny and the social worker, Deirdre, visit at the kitchen table. Deirdre then checks the cabinets for food. Kevin says that, he hasn't been to the store yet because the cabinets are fucking empty. Mm-hmm. Stabler asks Jenny how she's doing, and she says she's fine and says to just leave them alone. But in like a pleading way, she says it like, just leave us alone.
Yeah.
You know, like if you don't, it's too familiar.
She's going to get, yeah.
Yeah.
She's going to get shit on. If somebody stands up for you in front of him,
you're going to get it.
You're going to get it when you get home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kevin claims that he gave his mom his room to sleep in, but Stabler found his fucking nasty sweatpants under the pillow when he checked the room. Why are you stuffing your fucking fart sweats under your pillow?
Like, it's the smell of his own brand. It helps him fall asleep.
Ugh.
Yuck.
And Kevin tells them to fuck off. This is police harassment. Stabler gives Jenny his card and tells her to call him, which in front of Kevin, like, that's not the move, but...
Yeah, he's just going to take it.
Kevin full on screams at them to fucking get out. Mm-hmm. So they leave. Outside, Deirdre tells Stabler that she can visit every 2 days, but she's got 50 cases when her caseload's supposed to be 30.
Max at 30. Mm-hmm. God.
And since Jenny was eating and was clean, they can't act unless she files a complaint.
Mm. At the precinct, Benny tells Stabler that Cragen is pretty steamed. Kevin's lawyer is claiming that Stabler harassed him. Cragen comes over as Kevin's lawyer leaves. An official complaint against Stabler was filed. No doy. Stabler says that Kevin's going to try to keep his, quote, punching bag at home. And then Cragen says, quote, how many times do you think you can break the rules and get away with it? Stare off again. You stay away from him. Why are you asking that 6 seasons in?
Right. Yeah. Like, you just figured it out. I took a video of the lawyer leaving because it made me laugh.
Hello.
the way he's like staring at them and then throws the door open. All right.
So later at night, it's snowing. Stabler walks by Jenny and Kevin's apartment, and he sees Jenny standing out in the snow at night panhandling. Isn't it called busking now? I don't know what that means. She's like, get out of here. You were told to stay away. I'll tell my son. And Stabler goes, okay, let's go wake him up. And she's like, oh my God, no, please don't, actually. Stabler asks her, if he leaves, will she go back inside? Because it's snowing like really hard. She says that she has to make money because Kevin lost his job because of the trial. Stabler tells her that Kevin can take care of himself and offers to take her to a shelter. She refuses, so he fucking arrests her for disorderly conduct. He's just trying to get fired, you know?
But he's just arresting her to get her off the street.
I know, but like,
it's not okay, but he's doing it with compassionate intent.
Mm-hmm. She's like, how the fuck was I being disorderly? And he tells her, disrupting traffic, I guess?
Yeah.
Now we're back to that part of the show where we wonder how this man has not been fired.
Yes.
My God. At the precinct, Jenny isn't in booking, of course. She's upstairs in that little where they play video games area. Stabler brings her coffee, and then she's like, why are you doing this? Don't you have a family to go home to? He wants to know how much she makes panhandling. She's like, it's actually pretty good. It's like $20 an hour. And this is like 2005. That's like pretty good.
That is good.
Stabler notices that Jenny has a burn on the top of her hand, and she says she got burned on the stove. So he hits her, he burns her, he makes her panhandle in the middle of the night. Stabler tells Jenny that all she needs to do is tell him what Kevin does to her, and they can get him the treatment he needs. He's going down the road like, let's do this to help him. He needs help. Mm-hmm. Maybe that would get the mom brain, like, not mom, I shouldn't say mom brain, but whatever, you know what I mean?
It might adjust her perspective of, yeah, like, you're out to get my son, to like, oh, we could actually get him some help.
Yeah, she's like, right in prison? She thinks that if he goes to prison, he'll just be lost and really turn bad. Jenny says she's not blind. She knows her son. She knows what he did. So Stabler is like, dude, then fucking give him up. Then she asks Stabler if he has any kids, and he went from 6 to midnight because he's a dad. It felt weird saying that right after. I was like, do you have any kids? And he's like, boner. You know what I mean?
No.
When, yeah, I meant to, yeah.
An emotional boner.
Yeah.
No, I...
Emota boner.
I was just not on top of it, apparently, because I was like, this is a bit on the nose, but I'm into it. You had this shit figured out scenes and scenes ago, and I'm like, okay, we get it. This is about Kathleen. Like, this is... All of this part of it is new to me.
It's just like, yeah.
It's this moment.
They're enabling their kids. Two people enabling their kids.
But it's like, no, Tasha, it's not a bit on the nose. They had to go to this level for you to get what they were talking about.
Jenny asked him what he would do if one of his kids got into trouble. He's like, I'd help them. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Dad. Right. She thinks she failed in raising him and doesn't want him to fail again. She won't betray him. She thinks this is all her fault. Later, Benson shows up. She's pissed because he fucking signed back into work. She's like, I called your cell, your home, wherever, and I come here and you fucking sign back in. What's going on? What are you doing? And he's like, look, I didn't tell you because I didn't want you to also get in trouble.
Yeah.
And then he's like, we just keep losing people. The baby, Sam, Carol. Fuck Carol. He doesn't want another victim. Then Benson sees Jenny and asks Stabler what she's going to do. Stabler's like, I'm taking her home.
Later, Stabler's at his locker looking into his locker.
What is it to do?
You're so good at that. You're so good at everything. I love you. Let's get married. Let's have a circle.
Later, Stabler's at his locker looking into his locker mirror with I Heart Daddy written in Sharpie on it, I guess. Ew. It was like, my daughter made this for me. It was not good.
She was okay. Wasted when she did it. And driving a fucking truck.
Benson and Toots come over. Benny asks Stabes if he wants a way out. Toots spoke to a connection at Rikers, and they said Kevin was jonesing real bad when he was in for the murder. If he's still using, he's looking to score. They need to get creative if they're going to catch Kevin. Come on, gang. It's time for a friendship adventure.
I love this whole scene that they do.
I like when they do these.
Yeah.
A car squeals up on this little fuck walking down the street, and Toots pops out of the passenger side. This kid's like, what'd I do now? And Toots goes, get in the car, Naldo. And he's like, aw, I've got to send you. I took a video. I took a video of him. Aw, because he did.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
So this kid is obviously a
like an informant, yeah?
Yeah, connection that Toots has.
I think because he just like keeps having drugs on him. So they'll be like, empty your pockets. He's like, damn it. We won't get you in trouble if you, you know.
Right. So they both hop in the back seat. Staves is driving. This kid's name is Naldo. He swears that he's clean. And they tell him they need a favor. There's a dude looking to buy. And Naldo's going to sell to him. But he doesn't want to. Toots pulls a little baggie of powder drugs from behind Naldo's ear and tells him he's selling that shit to Kevin or Toots is going to bust him for it. Mm. Friendship adventure drug deal set up. Let's go find Kevin. Whee!
Later, Toots and Stabler watch Naldo wait for Kevin. It's not suspicious. Two men in a car during the day passing a giant pair of binoculars back and forth. Bird watching buddies. That's what they'll say. Kevin shows up.
Is that a blue-footed warbler? I haven't seen one of those. In... I don't know bird names.
They're going to get caught in their little, like, ear loop things that everybody can see. The... It's like, no, that's just for us to tell our other friend, hey, we found a cardinal. Okay. Kevin shows up. Naldo makes a pass. Kevin circles back. They make the deal. Narcotics officers surround Kevin and arrest him. Toot says, that's 3.5 grams possession with intent to distribute. That's a Class C felony, 3 to 6 years. They'll deal that down to probably 1 year mandated treatment place upstate. Is that good enough? Sable nods his head. He's like, good enough. Which I loved all of that. Toots.
But I wish they would, I mean, it's great because it protects Jenny, but it's like, you guys can do this in a lot of situations then, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah. Again, we like this in cop shows.
Yeah.
This, to me, is going the extra mile for someone who is in an abusive living situation. But you guys know what we're saying.
I was just reading this whole thing about how we actively hate, everybody actively hates corrupt cop stuff, but, like, loves cop shows where they do this shit and will be, like, on their side.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, the weird morality shift thing. I can't remember what it's called. I'll try to find it. I won't. I'll forget about it immediately.
Right. Yeah, totally.
At the precinct, a new case comes in. Munch gives it to Stabler and Benson. Jenny comes in. Oh, she asks Stabler if he knew they arrested Kevin. She's like, was it you? Stabler tells her that Kevin needed help and now he's getting it. Benny tells her it's a program and she can live without being afraid. Jenny says, what life? You took my son away. What if I got to live for now? And then she leaves. Ugh. Fucking Toyota.
Toyota.
Yeah.
This poor lady just like doesn't. In Santa Ana, California, 6-week-old Robert Henry Sage was found unresponsive in his crib in October of 1996. His death was initially assumed to have been a result of SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, which it's kind of a blanket term given to a death of a baby that can't be explained.
Yeah.
Or doesn't have a cause that we can put our finger on.
Sometimes it just happens. Like, I think that, you know, with nature too, like.
It's so sad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Autopsy testing later showed that baby Robert had died from an overdose of methamphetamine. Whoa. His mother, Cynthia Ann Pinson, had been breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
When confronted with this, Pinson said that she would, quote, try to wait a couple of days, end quote, after using drugs before she would nurse him again. This seems like a ridiculous excuse, but meth wasn't mainstream or widely known at this time. We've talked about the origin and rise of meth in past episodes, but it was between 1984 and 2004 that it surged in use across the U.S. And again, this was in 1996. In an Office of Justice Programs article I read from 96, it was called the crack of the 90s and considered an epidemic in California.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, across the board, but this article was talking about California. But still, in 96, like, people don't know a ton about it. So this isn't me defending this woman's actions, but also her ignorance of it was believable for the time. Pinson was originally charged with involuntary manslaughter and child cruelty. An arrest warrant was issued in November of 1996, which is bonkers because it's like a year after. There was no information as to why it took so long for them to issue this warrant, but once it was, she had moved and was MIA for several months. She was thought to have been living with her boyfriend and son's father, Robert Earl Sage.
What a name.
She finally surrendered to police in January of 1998, almost a year and a half after losing baby Robert. Deputy Public Defender Marnie Glass attempted to present an expert witness to testify that because meth was so new, quote, new, that there wasn't enough research done to prove that methamphetamine-tainted breast milk would cause death.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds bananas to us, again, but I did some reading on that too. And it's actually more complicated than I originally thought. So there are meds that are totally safe to take while pregnant that aren't safe to take while breastfeeding and vice versa. Again, not saying that fucking meth is in that category, but
yeah,
it was an argument that could possibly hold water in weighing Pinson's culpability. And the whole thing going into it is absolutely wild, like how little research is actually done on medication and how it transfers from breast milk. It's just an expensive fucking thing that they don't, whatever. It's just, who cares? It's women. So the public defender that she had was going to come in with this argument that there wasn't enough research done to prove that methamphetamine tainted breast milk. Okay. Ultimately, the DA's office negotiated a settlement. Pinson would plead guilty to felony child endangerment instead of the other two charges. But in this plea, she was not admitting that her actions directly resulted in her son's death. And even if she would have been convicted on both of the original counts, she couldn't be sentenced for both. So going through a lengthy and expensive trial would only result in 2 or 3 additional years. This was news to me, so I looked that up too. So she was initially charged with involuntary manslaughter and child cruelty, but from what I understood, since child cruelty would be the basis of the manslaughter, like it's the reason the death occurred, those things can't be added together. It's like rewording a similar charge, but she could be convicted of one or both, but could only be sentenced for one. So they initially just wanted at least one to stick, is what I'm assuming. This is what I'm gleaning from the information. I'd love some clarity if anybody fully understands that and is sitting there shaking their head going, Tasha, you're stupid. Because the literature on it's pretty dense and I'm stupid. So in the end, Superior Court Judge Richard Tui sentenced 39-year-old Pinson to 4 years in prison. There is nothing more that I could find. That was the end. But the reason that this was affiliated with the episode is because this was a very early on case of something like this, where there was an actual trial and case law and whatever with it. That's it.
I hate it.
Yeah. So next week, we're going to release a Patreon garbage cookie episode from this season, from season 6. Mm-hmm. As a reminder, garbage cookies are the uncut full weekly episodes. So we've got all of our extended rants, side conversations, extra dumb jokes. So you can get an idea of what's on the Patreon. So not next week, but the following May 14th, we'll have our next regular episode, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. We have season 6, episode 22, parts. Okay. This one's going to be a fucking doozy.
Yeah.
A gang finds a dismembered body and it leads them to some fucking body part ring, which is a thing. And Marley Matlin is in it again, the deaf woman who helped that lady unalive herself in season 5. Was it season 5 or season 6?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Was it 5 or 6?
No, it wasn't 6. It was 5.
It was 5. Okay.
Because then I did the thing on Kevorkian.
That's right.
Yeah.
That was a fiver.
All right, cool. Awesome.
I'll follow you down.
Okay. Rate and review us 5 stars only, or however many stars you want, but we hope that it's 5. Email us at svupod@pad. Email us at svupod@gmail.com.
My birthday's coming up, May 3rd.
Do you want to send us anything? Send it to us at P.O. Box 176, DeForest, Wisconsin, 53532. All of our social media is at SVU Pod. We've got merch at svupod.com. We also have merch on TeePublic. Our Facebook group is SVU Pod Elite Squad. The group chat's called Walk and Talk. There's an offshoot Facebook group that listeners have made called Single Tomato Book Club. Hashtag Little Bit Loud for Indie Pods. If you are an Indie Pod, use the hashtag. We're a little community. Go to www.patreon.com/SVU Pod to join the Patreon, to check out what we've got going over there. There's little clips of every episode. If you want to hear maybe a little piece of what you don't hear on the regular feed and decide if you want to join or not. And you should join. Hello.
Hello.
You can also contact us via phone/text. Gabe's not supposed to answer, but she might. But leave us a voicemail, please. At 1-920-345-7005. 1-920-345-7005. All right. 2 more eps. I love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.
She claims she... Oh, my God. Why can't I talk today?
Because you used up all of your S's saying fucking octopussy 700 times yesterday. It's so bizarre that you didn't say walk and talk. You like just described what they were doing, but didn't say walk and talk. That's so weird.
I've said walk and talk a lot this episode, so I try to mix it up. Oh.
Benson takes a call or something.
Also, mind your business.
My bad.
Are multiple marsupials marsupii, Gabe?
Marsups. Marsupies? Shut up.
Okay.
Cut to the hospital. Benny and Staves get updates from the staff. What?
Shut up. I knew it too. As soon as I said, I'm like, now she's going to get annoyed with me.
To our Lee Squad patrons, Marissa M., Elke H., Trisha S., Emily T., Katarina G., Mary D., Joshua H., Lem, Eliza W., Nikki B., Kaylin B., Melanie G., Andrew. Miranda B.,
Lauren T., Katie A., Kate H., Vanessa, Lax, Shelby K., Kimberly L., Bonita R., Marin, Courtney W., Ursula, Kate P., Jessica S., Danielle W.,
Jana M., Tammy J.,
Bear,
Sam D., Nisha G., Nada M., Mac Attack, Meg M., Casey, Abby W., Alexis J., Caitlin S., Christina D.,
Camille Z., Maggie D., Stan, Jessica P., Zahn and J., Madison H., Plop Plop Fizz, Emily O., what a relief it is. Shut up, Tasha. Victoria, Scout G, Melissa M, Desiree R, Lexi Y, Drew B, Monica K.
Oh my God, I was like, what? That's not a patron. A patron? What kind of name is Plop Plop? Katie S, Brenna T, Andrea M, Tash, Jenna, Al H, Andrea H, Nikki R, Aunt Sarah. Hey. Katie H, Vern, Catherine B,
Ariana, Madeline K, Mallory J, Kristen F, Samara B, Damn Sam, Alice D, Amanda P, Mahalia S, and Jules K.
We love you. We appreciate you. Thank you so much for supporting us. And you guys are really lovely people.
All right. Thanks, y'all. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.